You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, the host of this wonderful show. And join me on the other line, because it is a Monday. I mean, it's our weekly show from the West Indianapolis Community News and Forbes.com. Mr. Tony East. Tony, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad we're recording this at 6 o'clock p.m. because I can go to bed early tonight, because the Pacers schedule this week is chaos for those of you who live in Indiana or in the Eastern time zone. Four games at 10 p.m. or later, and the fifth game that isn't at 10 p.m. or later is at 9 p.m., and they play five times in 7 days, so it's going to be all the basketball, all late night, all the tired, so I got to catch up on the sleep tonight. It's going to be one of those weeks where I'm going to be tired, and like I always say, if I'm tired just watching, the players are definitely tired playing.
Yeah, and what that means is that we're going to have a jam-packed show. We're going to try to preview all five games. We're going to try to do it kind of rapid-fire style. Tony said he's going to try to talk quicker, so I'll trust him to do that.
No, we're not talking quicker. We are getting to the point quicker.
I'm not the long-winded one, of course, in this podcast.
I don't think me and you can talk quicker. We talk so fast.
Yeah, so but what we're going to do, we're going to start with some breaking down some of the games this week and just some of the players, and then we'll hit some of the news, including some interesting nuggets about Jeremy Lamb's return, and talk about some of the COVID stuff. Like I said, first off, we want to start with this week's games. The Pacers go 2-1. They beat New Orleans on Monday, Houston on Wednesday, and the Phoenix Suns. They lost them on Saturday night. Pacers now lost, what, two Saturdays in a row? Saturday seems to be kind of their kryptonite, although they did beat Boston. They did beat Chicago on Saturday to start the season. I think the first takeaway from this week, and you said it to me, I think it's Brogdon and Sabonis. So what player do you want to start with first?
Brogdon, we've talked about this before. You can make a case that either of them have been the team's best player this year. Sabonis just had 28 points and 22 rebounds. And I'm about to say that I think Brogdon's been a little better, but they've both just been so good. And it, you know, obviously 6-3 isn't like a blow you away record, but the Pacers have looked really good in large part because those two guys are playing a ton of minutes, and 95% of those minutes have been extremely high quality. Brogdon is currently eighth in the league in box plus minus, which is just an all-in-one advanced stat. Tenth in the league in box plus minus, which has him as the 10th most impactful player in the league, ninth on offense, which is just crazy, right? So he's been insane this year. He's basically 50-40-90. He's 0.03 percentage points away on field goals and 0.07% away on free throws, right? So insane efficiency, passing well, never turning it over. His steals are basically double his career high. They're three times as high as they were last year. So his defense has been good. He just played awesome defense on Devin Booker. I cannot get enough of how good Brogdon has been this season.
Yeah, I mean, he's arguably been the heart of the team, the player dragging them night in and night out, even though he is barely behind Sabonis in minutes, but you could basically say they won that New Orleans game because of him, and they honestly probably won against Houston because of him, his 35 points and just his – and then New Orleans threw the game-winning shot. He's certainly making a case for the All-Star game, right?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, he's making a case for the All-NBA teams at this point.
Well, the problem is there are a lot of good guards in the league. That's the one issue. Like, a lot. But
yeah, I agree with that, and I still don't – I mean, the list averaging 23-7-4 and two steals on his efficiency, it probably is none. It's probably just him. So –
yeah. I mean, we have to assume at some point his three-point percentage will come down to earth.
Absolutely.
but, I mean, he is shooting – from the field where he has previously shot in other seasons, not at this usage rate, but he does have a 50-40-90 season under his belt his last year in Milwaukee. So, like, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. Although I do imagine his numbers come slightly down to earth at some point, but I don't see his 24 points or 23.5 points per game being, unstable going forward, right? I think there's a good chance
If he keeps shooting 18 times a game, I think that's a perfectly reasonable number.
And I don't think it's reasonable to have less shots. I mean, with Warren out, there really isn't anybody who you say is going to take his shots, right? You could have a game where he has 14, Oladipo has 18, or you could see stuff like that. Oladipo at 16.5 shots per game. I guess Lamb could take, but I feel like Lamb, I guess maybe Lamb will take some of his minutes, but I feel like Lamb coming in is more going to be a redistribution of other people's shots. Like, do you expect, you know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
I mean, Aaron Holiday might get less shots. You might see Aaron Holiday's minutes start to shrink the way he's played this first 9 or 10 games. Has it been great? So, I don't know. I mean, I think at some point he will come down to minutes earth. He might hit an injury point at one point, but I think him averaging 20 plus points this year, let's put it that way, is I would not bet on it per se, but I would think it's a very high, it's very likely he finishes the year with 20 plus points averaging.
Yeah, Bjorkgren loving his him being a shooter because he's taking a career high in shots per game, and it's not even on a career high usage. His usage rate is 24. Last year it was 25, right? So he's just shooting more with the ball instead of just being a cog, like more so he was last year. And the thing that, to me, that supports that, I think his scoring can at least maintain. It'll probably dip a tiny bit to like 22, I think. But you know, he's not going to keep shooting 47.5% from three. That's ridiculous, even if he continues to shoot a ton of them. But he's shooting awful at the rim, under 50% from 0 to 3 feet. His career low before this year was 53%. So even just natural progression from the rim, he was awful at the basket against the Suns.
Especially he missed like five left-handed. It felt like five left-handed off the like reverse layup shots.
That was literally the only thing I could say bad about his game is he missed a bunch of layups. Once those start going, and like to be fair, playing with Giannis, but in Milwaukee, he hit like 65% of his shots from 0 to 3 feet, right? So let's say he gets to 60%. All of a sudden, the threes have been made up for by better layup shooting. So I think that when those balance out, his scoring will only marginally go down. And again, if his defense can maintain, which he's playing a ton of minutes, so it's reasonable to assume there might be some drop off. But if he can maintain the defense with this offense, I mean, he's just been unbelievable this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably jumped up from what you probably a top 40-ish player to maybe even top 30 this season. I mean, I obviously yeah. like if. You got to keep this up, but I mean, he's making a case that, like, you know, he's one of the best, I don't know, what, five guards in the East, right? I'm trying to think how many better guards are in the East right now.
He's been better than Lowry this year. Lowry right. would have been better before the year, but yeah, Kyrie for sure.
Bradley Beal probably.
Bradley Beal for sure. Kemba hasn't played yet, so that's another one that he's passed just by default.
Yeah, and Kemba, honestly, with injuries, the way he's been, is probably no longer in that conversation. When he plays, he might be, but he's not consistent enough.
Yeah, Beal and Kyrie are the only, like, no-brainer, right? Am I missing someone obvious?
I mean,
usually am when we do this.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Go through the list quick. Like, Simmons isn't a guard, so we don't have to count him.
But he kind of is.
He kind of is, but he kind of isn't. But if we don't want to count him this time, we don't have to. But, like, that's the other player.
We'll bend the rules for our own conversation.
I mean, the other one is Tyler Hero, but he's not really been that great this year. Or, like, Goran Dragic, who's
– I think it's just Kyrie and Trae Young. Trae Young's the third one. There we go.
Yeah, Trae Young. That's a good one, yeah.
There's three. Yeah, he's the fourth best guard in the East right now. That's crazy. He's been that good.
Yeah, so
– and yet you could argue that someone else has been better than him on the Pacers this year. I would make that argument, but I would hear it. Again, I've said this before. I would hear it from someone else.
Yeah, exactly. So Domantas Sabonis is coming off a – what do you have? 28 and 22 rebound game. I think the first 2020 game since Jermaine O'Neal in 2003. I saw
incorrect.
That.
Correct.
I saw that. I think Scott Agnes tweeted that out, but it might have been Pat Boylan. One of the two.
That is always incorrect.
They're always there with those good historical facts.
That he had the first 20-20 game since Troy Murphy in 2008. What he had that was the first since J.O., he had the first 25-20 game since J.O. in 2003.
Okay. So a little off.
I want to give Troy Murphy a little bit of credit when I can.
That's fine. You can do that. Coming off a really good week for him, honestly. He had 22 points against the Rockets, and he had 19 against the Pelicans. I believe he had all double-doubles week. I mean, he's a double-double machine. He's brought up his season average to 21 points and 12.5 rebounds per game and underrated 6.1 assists. He's second in assists on the team. He is playing a team-high 37.7 minutes per game. We were concerned he couldn't make the All-Star game again because of the return of some of the better players in the East, like a Durant, like a Kyrie, a Vic. But I think he's making a case that he might be like the second best center in the East, basically behind Embiid. And maybe you might say Bam, and depending where you put Giannis at center or forward. But
far he's better than Bam.
Right, he's been better than Bam. So I think there's a case you can put him in second best center if you're not counting Giannis as a center.
Yeah, he has been awesome. The thing that for Sabonis, that the improvement you never expect from a center is that like he's dribbling from the perimeter and it's good. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to explain it to someone who doesn't watch the Pacers, but like he had a possession against the Suns where he caught it on the right wing and he took two dribbles in the lane and then dribbled between the legs and then spun around and then passed it to a guard for layup. It's like, that was a guard play. Like, what is he doing? He takes it up the floor in transition. Now turns it over a lot when he does that.
Yeah. But he has a pretty high turnover percentage, by the way, 17.3%, which is pretty
average. That's gotta be a career high. That is.
I haven't. I'm. Let me look it up.
That is a career high. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, well, he has the ball in his hands more than he's ever had it. I mean, is like he's making all kinds of plays. I mean, he does turn over a little too much, probably, but it's more, I think, growing pains than anything.
Well, the thing. Yeah, that's the thing I was going to say though is because he's been so dynamic and adding all these ball handling stuff, and the fact that he's been more efficient than last year, despite doing that, is just crazy, right? He's getting to the line a bit more, taking and making an adequate amount of threes. Still finished. He's 77% from 0 to 3 feet shooting this year. Like, he's basically only shooting from the, like, inside 10 feet and threes, and he's making a lot of shots from those ranges. He's been really good.
Yeah, and I think the question with him is, we were joking about this, but like, his 3-point shot obviously has come down a little bit in terms of he was shooting, I think he was shooting 50% at one point. Now he's shooting 43%. But is he going to keep his 3-point percent up at, like, let's say high 30s, and that all of a sudden kind of makes him an even different player? Because if you have to guard at the perimeter, I mean, it makes things even – makes it even more deadly, and it creates even more, like, almost a spread five that you kind of want nowadays in the league.
So the thing that I would say, we always talked about how if he had the 3 and was a stretch option, like, yeah, that helps other guys a lot. It adds a lot of creation to the team. But let's go to Ben Simmons for a second, right? Not because of anything that about their games are comparable, but because everyone's always been screaming something similar about Simmons. But with Simmons, he still doesn't get sagged off of too much because, and we've seen this, the Pacers being guilty of this before, if you give Simmons space when he catches, he's so fast and he can actually handle the ball that boom, boom, 2 dribbles, he's at the basket. If you give him space, you got to be right up on him so he can't dribble. So Bonus adding a little bit of dribble moves with his quick decisiveness and his ability to read the game, you give him a little bit of space and, you know, one, two dribbles, all of a sudden he's passing to someone on the other side of the court or hitting a cutter. It's like you kind of still got to stay close to him off the ball because of that kind of stuff. So he's still – he's 9 for 21 from three, like, so far so good. I'm still skeptical of that, even though he's been decisive from three. He deserves credit for that. But I still think him adding playmaking dimensions and ball handling dimensions has made him add spacing and made him better.
Yeah, and what I've liked the most about him is, I think it was against the Rockets. They played the 2 big man lineup, and who was the guy? Was it Nwamba he went at? And he just basically abused him all night. I mean, you get mixed reviews, right? The Suns game, they went kind of big and got kind of beast, right? Him and Turner were both minus. But against Houston, I think it worked pretty well. He was a +4 on the court. Turner was a -3. But overall, I thought it worked pretty well in that game. The bench helped kind of blow it out for him. But you kind of a mix. But, like, he's done a really good job of kind of, when he has the matchup, just exploiting it and getting, like, really easy shots, right? Just backing them down, and then basically, you know, easy layups or and ones or little almost dunk shots. So that's been really good for him, I thought.
Yeah, Bjorkgren Ball has been great for both Sabonis and Brogdon. They're getting all these shots at the rim. High, quick decision-making basketball. Good shot profile. And the hallmark of any good team, they've got the stars to win games. Currently, those guys have been stars enough to win games. And we look back at a big week. We talked about the importance of, you know, they had 3 tough opponents last week, Rockets, Pelicans, Suns, of doing well before this road trip, going 2-1 because those two guys were so good. I think it merited a whole segment, and we could talk about some other guys on the roster really quick because, you know, I don't think anyone had a bad week.
Maybe, yeah, so I had like 3 tiny things I wanted to just mention real fast.
Go
through the list. So the first Fly one through. Is the every podcast I'm going to try to do is every weekly podcast at least. Turner's bonus are a plus net rating of 4.3 on the court. That is like 1 point lower than the team's net rating of basically +5, I think is what they're at right now. They're actually exactly a +5 net rating. So that's pretty good to mirror that. I think we should shout out real quick that Vic had that kind of gave him athleticism back, that amazing dunk. He didn't break down the game because it's a Saturday game. His dunk was vintage Vic, which I thought was a very good sign just in general. And the other one is, and you'll probably respond to this one, is Justin Holiday is doing an amazing job filling in for
TJ Justin Holiday's page up, yep. Justin Holiday was the guy I was going to say deserves a big shout for this week. The 2 games, we talked after the Pelicans game, in the 2 games since that he had 20 points against the Rockets and was +7 in a close win. And then had 17 points against the Suns in those 2 games, he was combined 12 for 19 from the field and 5 for 9 from deep. He's still doing he's shooting 69% from 2 this season, right? So he's been just killer at these 1-dribble pull-ups. Again, that might not maintain. Sorry, he was +22 in a 7-point win against the Rockets. I got some stats wrong. But he's just killing these 1-dribble pull-ups. Amazing defender. Bjorkgren's leaning on him so much because he's just been absolutely awesome this year. I also had Depot's page up because The dunk against the Suns. For those who didn't see it, Depot, they had two possessions in a row, actually three in a row, I think, where they just sent him around to Curl because the Suns had some lineup in where someone who shouldn't have been guarding Depot was guarding Depot.
Well, and Aiden was like afraid around the rim, it felt like, too, to do anything.
Yeah. So they just sent Depot around to Curl three times in a row. The first time he hit a pull-up, the second time he flies through the rim. And it was, I think it's the most explosive we've seen him since the injury, Adam. I don't know if you.
I think that's a fair, I think it's 100% fair to say.
He flew for this dunk. Boom, throws it down. Third possession, he drew a foul. Right? So Depot has somehow, Depot has been really good this year, right? Drilling his threes, passing well, rebounding extremely well, playing controlled while still being explosive. Outside of the Knicks game, I think he's played well every game. And he's like an afterthought because Brogdon and Sabonis are so good. We really, I just have been so impressed with Depot all season, both being a really good player and not trying to be contract year standout, push everything, force it, tank the team. Depot, he's been really good. And it's hard to not give him a lot of focus because he's been the third best player, but he deserves a lot of praise this year.
Yeah, he's easing himself back in. It feels like instead of trying to feel like – I think at the end of games, he's trying to take a little bit over, and sometimes it's working. It worked, I think, against New Orleans. Maybe didn't work against the Suns as much. But he's allowing himself to come kind of slowly back in. Instead of trying to, like, you know, be 2017-18 Vic all at once, he's kind of showing in little spurts, and he's being – his minutes, unlike the other guys, are being managed pretty well. He is at 32 minutes, which – is not great, but isn't, you know, as bad as, you know, Brogdon and Sabonis, who are playing, you know, 38 minutes a game. So,
right.
And it, you know, even last night, he didn't come into about 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. So it's a process. And so I hope, you know, the Pacers are going to need a clutch guy. Brogdon's been pretty good, but they need him and Oladipo would have both be kind of clutch guys that probably hit their max potential. So I hope that eventually kind of comes, but I think it's good to see that it's starting to get there, right? You're starting to see some Oladipo's be able to use some of his at the rim strength, which will be key if he wants to be able to close out games really well.
Yeah, I have two more sentences on players. One, TJ McConnell. Congratulations yes. to TJ McConnell and his wife on the birth of a child that had him out for the Suns game. No idea when he'll return or, you know, when during the road trip, whatever, if you meet up with the team. But congrats to him. Super cool. And honestly, I believe that's their first kid, too. So he's going to be a very busy man recently. And number two, the other backup point guard, Aaron Holiday, continues to be the only guy on the team who's struggling and can't find his footing, shooting 37%. I imagine he'll just start and slump until Jeremy Lamb returns and then go back to a role he's more comfortable with off the bench, and maybe he'll return to form then. He's kind of got to be better, but if Lamb's coming back this week, we'll see how much it actually matters.
And speaking of Jeremy Lamb's return, we're going to take one quick break, and then we're going to talk about the most recent news at hand that was reported out on Sunday afternoon. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our wonderful friends over at BuiltBar.com. Built Bar is the amazing protein bar company that makes 18 great bars in 18 different flavors, all the way from caramel brownie to almond apple crisp and coconut and peanut butter brownie. The bars are 100% covered in chocolate, soft and easy to chew. The Built Bar is great for somebody that's being health conscious. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging a delicious treat. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for someone on the keto diet. My favorite one, the peanut butter brownie one, is 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, and 5 grams of sugar. And right now, go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON. You get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Jeremy Lamb's return is imminent, do I say, Tony?
I don't know if that's the perfect word, but very, very soon coming. Yeah, Nate Bjorkren in practice on Sunday the 10th, saying he's getting close. He's very close to playing. We'll continue to get him ready and to ramp up his live action. He's there. He practiced today. He's been going live in practice, so he's very close to being on the floor with us in games. I'm waiting on the green light if I can play him in games. So it sounds like two things. One, actually, this isn't a sound like. I believe Lamb is traveling on the road trip with the team. And it sounds like he could return during this road trip or perhaps right after, maybe when they get back. So given that Warren's been out, and like I just said at the end, intentional segue, look at me go, Aaron Holiday's been struggling. I think Lamb will hop right in as a low minutes starter on the wing and get a little bit of sense of normalcy back to the rotation, and he can continue to be the self-scoring guard that he always has been.
Right, and if you don't remember, Lamb tore his, I believe, his ACL on late November 25th of last year, so it's a little over a year right now. Been waiting for his return. So, I mean, this is good news, frankly, because the Pacers are, put it lightly, are pushing their minute limits with some of their better players. Brogdon played, yep. Let's look this week's minutes real quick. Brogdon played 39 against the Suns. He played 39 against the Rockets, and he played 46 against the Pelicans, and that game went to overtime, so maybe 41 if it hadn't been an overtime game. And he's the first one who could definitely use a minutes relief. You got Justin Holiday, who's playing 45 minutes in the overtime game, 32 minutes and 28 minutes. Now, Holiday, that may be a little more sustainable. We might see more minutes from him the way he's playing. He probably deserves to play north of 25 to even close to 30 minutes. But, yeah, Lamb returning will be really, really good just for the minutes of some of their players,
yep.
Some of their guards. And then it would also be good because it allows him to go in the starting lineup at some point and put Aaron Holiday back in the role that he needs to be in.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think that just being wing size is going to help the Pacers a lot from Lamb, even if he's not doing wing things so much. Like, Aaron Holiday has been guarding mostly guards and, like, Zach LaVine, but he was on Mikal Bridges against the Suns, right? And Bridges was awesome, mostly because they were helping off of him on threes like crazy. But, you know, that there's a size advantage there for Bridges on Aaron Holiday that won't be there when Lamb is back, so... One, having him back adds to their size problem, right? They've been low on wings in general since Warren. Wings, I'm putting air quotes on whatever, because, you know, Brogdon can kind of do it, Depot can kind of do it, whatever. But, you know, actual wing size guys having Lamb back will help in that way, especially in the aggressive kind of switchy, not switchy is the wrong word, but, you know, the Bjorken defense, I think it'll help a lot. So it'll be nice to have him back. He's a good player. He can create his own shot. I don't think I've ever seen him miss a jumper from the left elbow in my life. So who knows what kind of level he'll be at. You know, we always say this with injured guys, right? Well, who knows how good they'll be? Maybe they'll be a lot worse. I think that, yes, players are worse after injuries, and they always are, but we're learning more and more in the modern medicine era that guys can be good coming off of injury. They're not as good, but they're still good, right? So I think he can still be a useful player. We'll just have to see how useful.
Yeah, the ACL isn't some crippling injury anymore. I mean, yep. His fellow teammate, Edmund Sumner, tore his ACL in college. So and he's – hasn't really lost a beat in terms of his speed and athleticism. It'll take time, right? He's not going to come out day one and be the same guy he was last year. But, you know, give it 20, 30 games. And for now, what the Pacers need from him is just a small role, maybe 15 minutes a night even. Just something to provide a little depth, right? They've stretched out their bench to play. They played Sumner. They played Cassius Stanley last night. They played last night as in against the Suns. They played Keelan Martin a little bit this week. I mean, they've tried to extend their bench to put Jakar as well. Now, McConnell's out, so that's also why I did it. But, they were playing some eight-man rotations against the Rockets only. They only played eight guys that night. So they could just use another guy who is just like a higher-level player, right? I mean, playing Sumner is fine, and honestly, I like to see him play minutes because it's good for development. But Lamb is just like a proven NBA talent versus Sumner still trying to figure out if he can find a place in the league. So that's what they need right now out of him. And, you know, over time, depending when Warren comes back, I mean, we talked about this like – The one strength of this team could be depth, right? If Lamb at some point was kind of an afterthought before the season, right? He's like, they already had nine guys locked in, and then he's like the 10th. So it's good because they lost one of those nine guys that have him kind of step in and fill that role at least.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be good to have him back. And the other updates on the injury front, Goga Bitadze and Jalen McHugh have been practicing. This is Scott Agnes's tweet says, Bjorkren wasn't immediately sure if Goga would be cleared to shoot up this week, but it sounds like he's progressing. He was due to be updated in 2 weeks after the season started, which was like 4 or 5 days ago. So it sounds like he could return soon as well, which something you mentioned earlier was Sabonis's minutes. I think if Goga even plays just 5 minutes a game, that helps a ton there, right? You get Aaron Holiday in the right role. Suddenly Brogdon's playing a few less minutes. Just all these guys coming back around the same time. You know, it's probably not good that Sabonis and Brogdon are playing as much as they are, but all these guys coming back will help a lot on that front.
Yeah, I mean, those guys should be probably closer. Brogdon closer to 30, and Sabonis probably closer to 34 minutes per game.
Yep, I agree.
And they got to figure out the staggering a little bit. I mean, they've done it okay, but they got to still figure out how to keep, like, one of Sabonis, Oladipo, or Brogdon on the floor at all times without, like, overusing Brogdon and Sabonis. Like, there's got to be a way to figure that out just a little bit. Or get Oladipo into different minutes, right? He's been playing very much, like, consistently with the starters and not much else, and so I would like to see him play some different minutes. But that's just some nitpicky stuff. The last thing we want to talk about was just some of the COVID updates.
And can I go first here, actually?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mostly because I don't think you know this, because while we were talking, Mike Bass, the NBA spokesman, released a statement on what's happening in the
NBA.
Yeah,
go ahead. I didn't know that.
So Mike Bass, the NBA spokesman, says, quote, "We anticipated that there would be some game postponements this season and planned this season accordingly. There are no plans to pause the season. We will continue to be guided by our medical experts and our health and safety protocols." So, for those looking for backstory there, NBA currently crisis is definitely not the right word, but COVID is hitting the league hard, right? The Heat Celtics game today, being Sunday listening for you yesterday, was postponed. The Heat were contact tracing and didn't have enough available players. The Celtics would have only had 8 available players the night before that. The Sixers only played with 7 available players for the same reason. So a lot of guys testing positive and knocking other guys out via the contact tracing around the league. And the league rules are something was like 15 minutes of close contact over a some hour time frame. It's very complicated, and it's like kind of skirting around that playing in a game is close contact, but a lot of activities off the court and stuff like that count. So that's how a lot of these teams are getting all these contact tracing issues. But a lot of positive COVID around the league, and they built the schedule for 2 things. One, according to Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated, I believe it was Chris Mannix, he said something to the effect of, you know, the league kind of expected January would be bad, and they only scheduled the first half of the season with this in mind so they could have these postponements and change the back half of the schedule. So the Pacers could be entering a time where, you know, some teams have some guys out, or even they have some guys out, and COVID end up hitting every team and maybe some games get postponed. But it does not sound like the league is going to pause, and they're just going to plow through. And if they have to change things come March, then they'll do that then.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would say is just expect some more COVID news. Yes. It might be a Pacer player, it might not, but just expect some game and then come to the Pacers to be, you know, delayed, or the COVID thing to hang over the whole thing. And that's just what you have to do now, is expect. I mean, you know, you do it in the NFL, you do it in the MLB when they were playing, and you just got to expect something to happen. And if it does, teams will have to maybe play short hand some nights or whatnot, but they want to get through this schedule. So
that's safety has to come first. Yeah. And if that means postponing one basketball game so they can effectively know who does and doesn't have the chance to be carrying the virus, I think they have to do that. And I was surprised they didn't with the Philly game. I'm glad they did with the Heat Celtics game, even though these guys are in the demographic where it's most likely that they'll be fine in the short term. We still don't know the long-term effects of the virus, and we don't know who they see, who the people they see, right? You do all the tracing. The safety has to be first, and they have to be careful. So I am very much in favor of postponements, and I'm glad the league is at least taking some precautions and finally released a statement. And that is all I want to say on this.
And I agree with everything you just said. So now let's do this. Let's preview the first 2 games of the week before we take a break. So
oh my gosh.
The Pacers have 5 games of the week. So we're going to
chaos.
Do this rapid style because we – do not want to go the next hour on these 5 games. So the first game the Pacers play this week is Monday at, I have schedule up at 10 p.m. Sorry, I'm on Central Time on my computer. 10 p.m. Eastern Time against Sacramento Kings. Tony, do you have their numbers up?
Well, I would like to start by saying while the Kings are 4-6 and have some okay-ish number stuff, they've lost 5 of their last 6 games and have gotten absolutely smoked in 3 of their last 4 games. They are 18th in offense, 19th in defense, 29th in overall net rating, 10th in pace. The De'Aaron Fox-led Kings are De'Aaron Fox and a bunch of guys who have not improved at all since being drafted or acquired by the Kings, and they are not a very good basketball team.
All right, so you want to start, you want to do Butcher first. Give me your Butcher. You just kind of probably said it, but give me it.
Well, you can have Fox because, you know, to cover their roster generally – no one else is really threatening, right? Halliburton's been good for them as a rookie, but as he's a rookie, right? Rashawn Holmes is a good player, but he's Rashawn Holmes, right? He's not nearly as good as Sabonis or Turner. Bagley's been bad, and his dad's tweeting trade requests. We all know what Corey Joseph is and Glenn Robinson are. Ayelita's good, but only plays 15 minutes a game. Right? They don't really have a good roster. Their top 3 guys are De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, and Harrison Barnes. So basically, your butcher's one of those 3 guys. Buddy Hield has go-off potential, so I'm picking him. He takes 10 threes a game. He's shooting very poorly on 3 so far this year, only making 3.3 of his 10 attempts per game. If he hits 5 or 6 of them all of a sudden, and that's possible for him, he's a great 3-point shooter, that completely changes their team. Harrison Barnes is what he is, but if Buddy Hield has good go-off potential, and you know the Pacers, I'm sure, will know that and guard him well from the perimeter and not sag off of him too much, but as we just saw with Mikal Bridges, some of their defense kind of concedes that one pass away, don't recover quickly stuff. So they got to be good on Hield.
Yeah, I just want to do the obligatory shout out. Get Buddy Hield off this crap team somewhere good. I personally like him. All right,
Buddy Hield is too good to be on the Kings.
Yeah. So your Butcher's Hield, mine is Fox. I'll do X Factor first, and I'm going to go with Sabonis in this game simply because, and I got to do 5 different ones because it's going to be hard. But simply because he should have the matchup advantage. I imagine he'll be guarded by Holmes, but you might see some Bagley on him depending on what they decide to do. And he should have another just nice night just kind of abusing the smaller players on him, basically.
Don't forget that Hassan Whiteside is on this team. And if you don't know how far Hassan Whiteside has fallen in his career, he's now the
playing
third.
About 14 minutes a game. I don't 13. I don't know. We'll see a ton of him.
He's the third string center for the Kings. Yeah. He's 31. He's probably on his second to last contract ever. But anyway, yeah, Sabonis is a good pick. Rashawn Holmes is actually a decent NBA player. He's very high energy, though. He's kind of like Jakar Sampson. And that's good when he's on the court, but he kind of is fueled by energy, and that can't last forever. He only plays 27 minutes a game. So there'll be times when, like you just said, Sabonis will have a nice matchup advantage, or Turner will be guarded by, you know, Harrison Barnes or something, or Bagley even, who has been pretty rough this year. So, yeah, it could be a good game for the bench guys. My X factor is going to be whoever Halliburton's guarding. Again, Tyrese Halliburton is awesome. I was really into him in the draft. I forget exactly where I had him, but it was in the top 10. He ended up going 12. He's probably been the rookie of the year so far, so picking on him is uncool here, but he's shooting really well, and he's a good player, but he's a rookie guard. His defense isn't awesome. Someone, probably Oladipo, will be guarded by him and be able to have a nice game, and, you know, Vic having a good game usually spells good things for the Pacers. So my X factor is Oladipo. If he can maintain a steady head, I think the Pacers can beat the Kings pretty easily.
So do you have a win or a loss here?
Yeah, Sacramento, they started off the season well, and now they are just getting pummeled by everybody. So I think that the Pacers will continue their pummelings.
I agree. I think they'll win as well. The Pacers' next game, and they take on the Golden State Warriors on a back-to-back. That means they play them Tuesday.
Oh, the Pacers are on a back-to-back.
Yes, the Pacers are on a back-to-back is what I mean. They play the Golden State Warriors at 10:30 p.m. Be sure to go. You guys are ready to stay up late, get your popcorn, maybe drink a little coffee. I think with Butchers, we can sort of – just move past picking one and just both go. Steph Curry is the Butcher. He's having a great year. He scored 62 points like last week. On season, he's averaging 30.6 points per game on like a 46-40 shooting, taking almost 12 threes a game and still shooting 40%. He is an amazing player still, and I feel bad that he doesn't have more talent around him, frankly.
See, remember when I was mad at you for talking me out of the Pelicans? Now the Warriors look much better than them because – the way you talked me out of them was you got me to thinking about Steph and how we talk, you know, we talk about James Harden as like, if James Harden's on your team, locked to make the playoffs. He's that good. And Steph should be in that tier as well. And after a slow start where people were, for some reason, opining on Steph Curry's entire career, Steph Curry has reminded everybody how good he is and has shown that he is good enough to get a team of not awesome players into the playoffs by doing what you just described. 12 threes a game, makes 40% of them. 7 assists with this roster is ridiculous. They don't have anyone who can do anything. So the fact that he's been able to do that's been impressive. You know, Kelly Oubre has been like the worst scorer ever this year. I think he's shooting something like abysmal on layups, like 20%, 13% from three. So that they just haven't been getting any production. You know, Wiggins hasn't been shooting very well, although he is hitting his three. So yeah, Curry's the Butcher. I think he's had some great, Clay has had some crazy games against the Pacers. Steph's had some crazy games against the Pacers. I think the key to beating the Warriors for this Pacers squad is maybe Curry's going to do his thing, chase him around, but don't let anyone else go off. I think we say that a lot with him.
Yeah. My only worry about Curry is his durability all year just because he gets hurt a decent amount. Okay. I want X Factor first last time, so you can go first this time.
Okay. I can do that. The X Factor here, James Wiseman is playing center for the Warriors. Their backup center is like who even knows? Pascal, kind of. Kevon Looney a lot of the time. Is their backup center. So Turner could have a good game. Sabonis could have a good game. I'm actually saving Sabonis for a later game as my X factor this week. So I'll go with Turner this game. You know, that they're someone, if Draymond's on him, maybe, you know, he won't have a good game, but they don't really have the firepower to chase him out on the perimeter and slow down the Pacers pick and roll stuff. And his defense is going to be really important against Steph Curry, who's running around everywhere and making everybody panic. So Turner can have a level headed defensive game and hit maybe 2 threes. I think, the Pacers can have a good shot in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take Brogdon. I assume he'll be the guy tasked with guarding Steph. The key for him is, one, not letting Steph score 60 points. The other one is maybe trying to reduce Steph's assists. I think you let him score 30, like we saw, 30, 35. You could probably still win the game. But if he's able to get in that 7 to 10 assist range, then you might be screwed. So I think Brogdon will have a tough night ahead of him. He might have a bad offensive night. But if he can somehow contain Steph just a little bit, they should have a shot at this game, but I am worried with the back-to-back, they probably aren't able to pull this one out.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough with the back-to-back late, right? They practice in Indiana on Sunday, so they are really adjusting to a 3-hour difference and in like 2 days and have two tough teams back-to-back. So, you know, maybe they blow out the Kings and then it doesn't really become a big deal, but I'm imagining that they will be And Sacramento to Golden State's pretty far. So, yeah, I'm imagining a tired team here chasing Steph Curry around. I think the Warriors win.
Not that far, Tony. It's like two hours away. It's like 2 hours. Sacramento's like 2 hours more inland from San Francisco.
For some reason.
It's not very far, but it's okay.
Well, now I'm picking a win. No, I'm just kidding. I still think the Warriors win, but you know, it could be a good game, but they have Steph Curry. So.
Let's see. The exact distance from San Francisco to Sacramento is – oh, I'm wrong. It's an hour and 21 minutes. So
why did I think it was way farther? What am I thinking?
Like, it's like going here to, like, I would say Cincy, but sort
Fort
of
Fort Wayne.
That. Yeah, Fort Wayne pretty much. So
what am I thinking of?
You're thinking of San Fran to L.A. That's a long trip.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Which is going to be a long one. And they play one of the L.A. teams coming up. But first, let's take one quick break because today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. We are in the middle of the football playoffs, and by the time you hear this podcast, you will probably already know the, I think it's six matchups next week and another six NFL games, and betonline.ag is the place to place those bets. They have you covered. It is the one place you can trust. I'm thinking if you want to bet the Pacers right now, I was looking at the line. They are a -4 in Sacramento. I think that's a good bet to make, but I'm not always right, so don't take my advice all the time, but I think they'll beat the Kings and by more than four. Most likely. And if you go to betonline.ag right now, use promo code Locked On. That's LOCKEDON. You get a 50% welcome bonus. Go to betonline.ag, your online sports book. All right. The third game of the Pacers 5-game West Coast road trip is against the Portland Trailblazers. And I didn't do this. We didn't say it, but the Warriors are 20th in offensive rating and 22nd in defense.
Whoops.
It's okay. We got a lot of games to get through. So the Blazers, you have them because I do not.
Yeah, the Blazers are the same Blazers as always, which is surprising. I thought their offseason would make them a little changed. The Blazers are 7th in offense, Damian Lillard, baby, and 21st in defense for a net rating of 10th. They are 5-4 in 6 of their 9 games, just total blowouts in one direction or the other. They either win by a bunch or lose by a bunch. The thing that makes the Blazers a tiny bit different this season, you know, Lillard's obviously been amazing, but let me stop and talk about C.J. McCollum because, believe it or not, C.J. McCollum is averaging more points per game than Dame so far this year. McCollum shooting 47% from the field, 44% from three on 11 attempts from three. McCollum shooting more threes than Dame per game this season as well. He has been lights out from everywhere on offense and looks better than Dame at times. I've caught a few Blazers games because I was really high on their offseason for different reasons than C.J., but he's been shooting really well, 5 assists per game. He's kind of faux point guarding. He has been awesome, and the Pacers have struggled with Dame and CJ in the past already. Now, they have a different coach now and a different system, but the ball pressure can only do so much if they're just hitting everything. And if CJ is really good, suddenly that is a duo that's tough to keep up with.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, my butcher was going to be CJ McCollum. I mean, he's been –
better than Dame this year. I'm not even kidding about that. He's been better than Damian Lillard.
Yeah, he went toe-to-toe with Harden. I watched it, 2 weeks ago.
That was the first game I saw.
He basically beat him. He's been on my fantasy team this year, so I've been tracking him a little more than I usually would. Of course, you know how me. You know how I am. I track those players a little bit more. Yeah, and so Lillard and McCollum are what the Pacers, I guess what Brogdon Oladipo aspire to be, right? Maybe not that quite offensive output, but just like that level of dominance. I mean, there's always rumors about they should trade McCollum for this or that, but like at the end of the day, these two guys are probably the best duo outside of Steph and Clay when they're healthy in terms of guards in the league. I mean, at one point you could make a case, maybe Westbrook and Beal right now, I doubt it. Maybe, you know, at one point it probably was Harden and Paul, but these two guys are consistently healthy. They both play upwards of, let's say, 70 games in a normal season. I mean, and they're just consistently 25 plus points a game, you know, for now 2 or 3 years in a row.
Cash scores, they're ridiculous. In terms of their comparison to Brogdon and Depot, they're worse on D and they're substantially better on offense. They're such a good duo. The thing that defense is what I want to talk about with the Blazers. I was super high on their offseason. They got Covington, who's a good defender, really good team defender, okay on ball defender. They got Derek Jones, who's the opposite, really good on ball defender, lesser team defender, but they've had no forwards for forever, right? They've had no forward defense at all. I thought those guys would come in, really jazz up their D. Their D has so far not been fantastic, giving up a ton of threes per game, 37%, 37 threes, 35% of them going in. So they're not allowing a lot of makes, but allowing a lot of takes. So something might give there eventually. And you know, they're not getting a lot of steals. So the Blazers, defense not as good as I thought it would be, which is preventing them from being as good as I thought. but my butcher is choosing CJ's Dame. And when you have Dame and CJ, you can still win any game because they still have Nurkic who can score a little bit. Carmelo can always score. Gary Trent can score. Cantor can score. They've got firepower everywhere. So if your defense can't keep up at all, you're screwed, and the Blazers are done.
So you went X-Factor first last time, but I went first butcher. So do you want X-Factor first this time again?
You can go first.
Okay. So the Blazers defensively are not the best. Like you said, they're 21st in defensive rating. So offensively, I'd like to put up Oladipo for this game. I think
That was mine too.
Oh man, I keep taking. I'm sorry. I mean, I just think this is the kind of game where they get a day off in between. Oladipo probably won't play the Warriors game, which you also forgot to mention, but I'm guessing he won't play the back to back. That means he'll be the most rested of all the players. And so I just like the, you know, him having 2 days off, him, you know, going against some of the best players in the league and him trying to show that he's kind of on their level once again. So I like people to have a nice, you know, maybe 30-point night even.
Doug McDermott, come on down. First of all, road trip. So Doug McDermott's about to hit a ridiculous amount of threes over the next week, right?
More than he's already hitting? I mean, he's rated. He's been really good so far.
Aren't his home road splits going to be hilarious again? Aren't they always? Isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, he's shooting. Okay, he's only shooting 35% this year. I'm wrong. He was shooting higher last week, but I guess I kind of lost track this week.
Yeah, he got hurt and got tripped up a little bit there. But he's back, so who cares? Yeah, as Covington and Jones, good players, good defenders. They're both under 30 minutes a game. Actually, Covington's right at it. And their bench wings is like Gary Trent, Carmelo, Rodney Hood, Anfernee Simons. All okay players, but not really wings. You know, Melo's a power forward, interior-y guy. And then Gary Trent, Anfernee Simons, and Hood are guards. McDermott has been just flying around these screens, getting in, scoring twos. If he can hit his threes, you know, those guys can't really defend him. I think he can swing those bench minutes for the Pacers and they can win the game. But I'm going to pick a Blazers win because they have Dame and CJ.
You know, I always get surprised. I'm going to pick a Pacers win in this game, actually.
Nice.
You know, I somehow think they'll go 2-3 on this road trip, so that should give my next two games. So
two wins on this road trip would be awesome. That's how hard it is.
Yeah, and they seem to always show up for West Coast road trips. They do. So on Saturday night, they will have a day off in between. They head down to Phoenix. So that they go from California to Oregon. Down to Phoenix, that's a little bit of traveling. And they take on the Suns for the second Saturday in a row. And the Pacers are so far lost their last two Saturday games. And the Suns are what we saw on Saturday. They are a very good team, and they're just better than they've been in the past. They've got, you know, three legit players. And if Mikal Bridges keeps shooting like that,
more than that.
No, but like three players who are like, if Mikal Bridges shoots like that, he might be borderline like all-star-ish level.
We can kind of fly through this because we literally just saw Pacers Suns. We know Brogdon's going to be awesome. They don't have the size and speed to match him at the same time. We know Sabonis is going to be awesome because DeAndre Ayton's not very good right now. And everybody else is going to have to step up. They didn't force any turnovers. They just struggled at basically a lot of the stuff that's made the Pacers successful this season. And they got to slow down Booker a little more. And he was incredible in the fourth quarter. The Suns have always had Booker, and they've always had, you know, a lob threat center, Tyson Chandler, Ayton, whoever, and okay bench guys. Now they finally have some effing wings, man. Like, finally. Bridges is amazing. He's really stepping into his own. He's going to be an all-star. Not this year, but probably next year. Jay Crowder's really helping them out. Just adult wing who can do stuff. And Cam Johnson. Cam Johnson's really good. He was really good against Pacers just last night, averaging 13 points a game, shooting 40% from three. Having some effing wings, man. I'm pointing at my desk. You can't see me. Has just allowed them to defend big players and hit some outside shots, provide spacing for Booker. And, oh, yeah, they have Chris Paul now. So, for all the reasons we saw last night, the Suns are going to be a tough beat for the Pacers.
Yeah, I don't think we need to do butchers and expected for this team. I mean, we've just saw them play.
We just saw them. The same two guys we picked last time, Booker and Paul Dunn. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing, I guess, a shout-out for the Pacers, they can do better. They seem to lose gas in those fourth quarters, and that would be nice to see them play a little bit better in the fourth.
So I actually want to just give one interjection about a player for this game.
Yeah, what player?
They did not have McConnell. And I want to see how much his energy with the second – because they went with a gimmicky second unit in the fourth quarter. It worked.
Yeah, they actually were probably a positive in the court.
It worked. But they didn't have the same second unit energy they used to have, and Aaron Holiday still wasn't hitting his shots as he was leading that unit. I wonder if they'll have McConnell back by then. I would guess, since a week from now, that they will. How much his energy can really help them, because the Suns second unit players outside of Cam Johnson didn't really play super well. So if they could get a little more out of their bench, I think they can.
They were missing a true point guard for sure, and then they were missing high energy at the same time. They got a little bit of the energy back with Sumner and Cash Stanley in there, who, which you mentioned, Sumner was a +8 in his 6 minutes.
They were fantastic. They were both
actually
fantastic.
Worked, but you just need McConnell, that like guy who can just handle the ball and kind of steady the ship, if that makes sense. All right. So the final game of the week, a game we all love to see when they play the Los Angeles Clippers. They play them on a back-to-back. This time it is at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night. So just after all day of football, you can just watch this game also. and the Clippers are one of the, you know, they're the Clippers. They're one of the best, you know, two or three teams in the league, I would say.
Their offense is amazing. They're third in offense here, 24th in defense. We're going to skirt back. I'm picking a Suns win, by the way.
I am not, by the way.
Oh, okay. Look at you. Yeah, the Clippers are really good because they can score at an crazy level, and they have stars, and they finally have, like, capable post play because Serge Ibaka's on the team now, and Nick Batum looks a lot better than he has in the past, and you know, they were basically – like a third quarter effort away from the conference finals last year. They're still that level of team, but the thing that's made them so good this year, and I'm going to get roasted for this, but Paul George is playing close to his MVP level season, as he called himself. He got third in MVP that year. But anyway, he's not scoring.
It's still pretty good, just to be honest.
Quite
that's
the
really
same
good.
Rate, but yeah, he's averaging 25 points a game, 6 rebounds and 5 assists on 50-50-95 splits. He's been an unbelievably good offensive player and still a good defensive player. He opened up about how his mental health is better in an article I read recently. So Paul George has been the Clippers' best player and leading them to success this year. And that is why they're really good, because they also have Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, and he always just does well against the Pacers. He just has a, you know, he has a certain dislike for the team, and I don't really know why. I don't think he –
draft trade.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. But no, not Kawhi, but PG. PG didn't like the Pacers. Kawhi, who I'm assuming PG is your butcher, so I'll pick Kawhi as my butcher. He's averaging 23 points a game this year. Not shooting the greatest, but you know, still doing Kawhi things. And he, I mean, are the Clippers on a back-to-back? We should probably check that out to see.
We missed one earlier. Portland is on a back-to-back against the Pacers. The Clippers are not.
Okay, so that we'll probably see everybody then. Yeah, I mean, he is, you know, he's the two-time NBA Finals MVP. I mean, there's not much else you can say. I mean, he's just a really consistently good player. And if him and George are cooking, they should be able to beat the Pacers relatively easily, depending on, you know, unless, you know, you have one of those nights from like an Oladipo or a Brogdon or Sabonis.
Two stars are what they are, right? That makes every team tough to beat. That's why the Pacers have been good, as we talked about in our first segment here. The Clippers struggling on defense right now, 24th. One is because they're giving up tons of shots from inside of the arc, which is kind of – excuse me. They're giving up a ton of attempts from inside the arc, which is very interesting to me. But the other thing is, you know, they made some moves this offseason. They now have Luke Kennard on this team. They have Batum on this team. They still have Lou Williams on this team. They still play Reggie Jackson for some effing reason. That's a lot of perimeter defenders that aren't good at perimeter defense, so they kind of concede a lot there. They give up a lot of drives, which is not conducive to awesome defense. I think they can clean that up pretty easily, you know, by playing less Reggie Jackson. And Kennard's been good for them on offense. I don't want to belittle him, but you know, there are ways the Pacers, if Oladipo and Brogdon can be getting in the paint and creating the threes, if the dish-out threes are falling, that the Pacers can keep up with this team because their defense hasn't been good. Their offense is ridiculous. Again, they have the two stars. Ibaka's good, Kennard's good, Lou Williams is good. But they can keep up if they can hit their outside shots on the one passes. They just have to do it.
So I'm going to go X-Factor first because I think you're going to steal mine, but I think the bench is the X-Factor in this game.
I'm not stealing yours.
Okay, I'm using my bench one finally. They shouldn't win this game, but there is a chance the bench, because it is so – it's just a really good unit, right? It's guys who've been together now for two straight years, you know, and they just – play with like a cohesion that you just don't often see with bench units, because it's always, you know, guys in and out or whatnot, and there's just some kind of like chemistry there that's amazing, and that's the one where they could kind of beat this team. They can kind of keep it even with the starters, and the bench can just do their thing and kind of, you know, give them an extended lead at times. That could be the way to a victory. I don't know if I see it, but that's my hope of them, the Pacers at least.
I told you earlier I was saving Sabonis for a different game.
Oh yeah, I forgot you haven't used him yet. I'm sorry.
I have not. This is that game. Serge Ibaka is starting at center for the Clippers. I don't have a problem with Serge Ibaka. I think he's a very good player. He cannot guard Sabonis capably, I don't think. He's not quite the size of bulk required to keep up with him. Zubac can kind of do it, but he only plays 18 minutes a game. I think Sabonis is due for a big one. And again, if the Pacers can get those drives, maybe they can get the pick and roll working. Sabonis can be the one making those through passes to the open three-point shooters. I think the Heat can have a good game against the way the Clippers play, against the personnel the Clippers have, and I think he could potentially swing this game to the Pacers' favor.
So do you have a win or a loss here?
Honestly, Adam, even if I thought the Pacers were going to play up to their full potential in this game and Sabonis is going to do all the things I just described, they're on their second back-to-back in five games and playing their fifth game of a road trip. No matter how good they play, I think the Clippers win this game.
I would agree with you. Now, the Clippers do have a long week. They don't like – I believe they have – I have the schedule up for a second. I believe they have four games this week as well. So it's not like – it's not a cut.
Clippers, they have – yeah.
They have a game Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. So they'll have played four games in 7 days. So it's not like it's a cakewalk, right? They'll have played five games in 9 days. Like the NBA schedule this year is so condensed that, like, you have to remember, it's not like the Pacers are doing something unique to everybody else. But I do agree, it's tough to travel all the way across the country and then keep zigzagging across where it's not like a start up north and move your way down the coast. It's like start in the middle and go up, then down, then cross. So it's not the easiest thing. So yeah, and they travel from Phoenix to LA is not easy. It's not that close either. So I do agree with you. It's just going to be one of those, like, let's get home and I want to sleep in my bed kind of games.
Yeah. Look, yes, every team is dealing with it, but not, you know, the teams that Pacers are playing are clearly not dealing with it because they're playing home games this week. So Pacers undefeated on the road. They've done well so far, but they've only played the Bulls and the Pelicans. This is their true road tests. If they win one time on this road trip, they'll come back home 500 and have a little bit of an easier stretch. If they win two times, they'll still be, you know, firmly cemented in the East. If they win three times, one, we'll know they're a legitimately damn good basketball team for sure. And two, they'll just be cruising after they get home.
Yeah, I think it'll get two wins, but if they could pull out a third, that would really sort of – they could win – I mean, they win four, it's like, oh, this seems legit. Three, they're still pretty legit. Two is, like, expected. That makes sense.
I think one – look, like, yeah, it'll seem bad. They'll be 500 when they come back. But, I mean, I'll be like, okay, that was a tough-ass road trip.
Yeah, I mean, I think
– troops, Jeremy Lamb's back. Let's go.
I think at minimum they should beat the Kings, and then they should – I picked them loose. They should beat the Trailblazers or the Suns. They just saw the Suns, so they should know how to maybe play them better or want to beat them. And the Blazers, they have enough time off where it's not, like, terrible for them.
The Suns are closer to best team in the league than people think, I think. They've been ridiculously good. I was very wrong about them. So losing to the Suns again, I would not think that's a big deal.
No, but I think you play
a team. I think the second most likely win isn't the Blazers. I think the second most likely win after the Kings is actually the Warriors.
Okay, I think that's fair. I guess what I mean is I think when you see a team within a week, you should know how to adjust and see if you can beat them. That's fair. The coaching thing. It's a strategy. You've got a good coach, you can kind of do that. So that's how I feel, but I don't know.
Should be a tough week. All right, get us out of here.
Yeah, we've been doing this now for almost an hour, so lots of games this week. You can check out all those podcasts this week as the games happen. I'll have, I think, most of the breakdowns of the games, but Tony might hop in there with one or two. He'll be at least doing all the previews. And as always, we will bring you a new show, bringing on the whole week next Monday, so look for that show. That is all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. You can follow us on Twitter @LockedOnPacers. Have a great rest of your day.